This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Immigrant entrepreneurs have had a striking impact on the U.S. economy. Here are some names of companies that immigrants have started. You might recognize them: Yahoo, eBay, PayPal, Google, so many more. These are companies that have found success in the U.S. and created jobs here in America. But the U.S. is losing its competitive edge in attracting entrepreneurs to our shores. Studies show that due to immigration red tape, the United States is missing out on the contributions of high-skilled immigrants who want to come here to start businesses. And if Congress would adopt the right policies on startups and high-skilled immigration with broad-based bipartisan immigration reform, it would have a tremendous impact on the future U.S. economy. And to tell us more about this, we're joined by Dane Stranger. He is the author of the study, Give Me Your Entrepreneurs, Your Innovators, Estimating the Employment Impact of a Startup Visa, and Peter French, founder of Free Flow Research. Free Flow Research is a nonprofit with the purpose to build strong networks in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics researchers here in San Antonio. And we had, you know, foreign-born researchers are more than twice as likely than native-born Americans to start a new business. Why is that? We want to hear from you. If you're a foreign-born entrepreneur, you started a business, call in. The number is 614-8980. We want to hear your story. So, Dane, let me ask you about your study. Tell me about the findings. What did you come up with?
Sure. So this is a study we released back in March, and at the time, comprehensive immigration reform was kind of proceeding at pace in Washington. And one element of that was a proposed a new visa, a startup visa, that would be a specific visa class for entrepreneurs, for immigrants who wanted to come to the U.S. and either start their business or grow a business. And there were certain criteria and qualifications that people had to meet, but it was a new class of visa. And this idea has floated around Washington and various other think tanks around the country for the past few years, and it's been part of the Startup Act that's been introduced three times in the Congress, but it now made its way into actually immigration legislation. And so what we try to do is, drawing on various data sets and studies, is try to say, okay, assuming this passes, assuming we get a startup visa, what can we expect to see in terms of the potential ranges of employment impact?
So getting a startup visa, there are certain requirements that someone would have to meet in order to get that visa. What are those requirements in theory?
Well, it's gone through a few changes by now, but some of the original qualifications and some of the variations that have existed over the past few years, you would have to bring in a minimum investment level, so either already have a commitment from, you know, U.S. investors, venture capital, private equity, and over the course of your time in the U.S., so the duration of the visa, there was some employment thresholds that kicked in. So after 2 years, you'd have to have created five jobs, and at the end of 3 years or 5 years, it was reevaluated. And depending on your job creation, you either got permanent status or your visa expired and you had to leave. And there was a few other smaller qualifications. You had to, you know, keep in touch base with USCIS. You have to share things with, U.S. immigration authorities, things like that. But the investment and employment were the two big ones.
So Peter French over at Free Flow Research, you're working on bringing in foreign-born entrepreneurs and people who are into STEM areas into San Antonio, into the United States to do work. How are you able to do this as a nonprofit that you wouldn't be able to do if you were a regular business?
Sure. In 1998 and 2000, Congress took up a couple of different actions that related to the H-1B visa and specifically to institutions of higher education and nonprofit research organizations and government research organizations, because they realized that the arbitrary cap that Congress had set in 1990 on H-1B visas was limiting innovation and really stifling the STEM industries, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math. And basically Congress came up with this idea that, boy, we needed to relax this this cap for these special groups of folks so that they can help advance the innovation economy. And so really what Free Flow is doing is kind of coming back to that act and saying, we have a way that we think we can do this by creating these research partnerships with for-profit companies and working with entrepreneurs and startups, basically utilizing the cap exemption that was created for these nonprofits. We can help these groups at least streamline that process. The other important part for us is to help the international students who are already in the United States. You know, they're receiving a majority of the PhDs and graduate-level degrees in most STEM fields, and there's not a very clear path for them to stay, and they're responsible for a tremendous amount of the innovation. They earn more than half of the patents. And so just as one example, as an E-Verify employer, we can help these students extend their student visas so that a private employer does not have to sponsor their visa. And that's important, just to give these entrepreneurs and innovators as much runway as they can have before they have to grapple with the visa system at all.
So we have all these students getting their PhDs and learning high technology skills. They're here on a student visa, but once they graduate, they have a hard time sticking around here, even though they very much want to stay here and create businesses and create value and wealth in the system, but they got to go back to their home country, right?
That's right, and that just didn't make sense to me. You know, the Kauffman Foundation, their research, and another gentleman named Vivek Wadhwa has done excellent work looking at sort of the immigrant exodus and this brain drain where the United States is attracts more international students than any other country. In fact, 21% of all students who study abroad do so in the United States, but David, to your point, they often have to leave. And so we wanted to find as many pathways as we could to help mitigate that reverse brain drain. The state of Michigan has a program called Global Detroit, and they've really done as much work probably as any state in the nation on studying the positive economic impact of retaining these international students. And what they found is that the students who take advantage of their extended student visa periods are just as likely as students born in the state of Michigan to stay in Michigan and work. And they're three times more likely to do so than students who just came from another state. So we have, I think, a number of tools at our disposal to help keep more of these foreign students in the U.S. and in Central Texas. We just need to educate employers and the schools themselves and the students themselves that these alternative paths exist and help them stay.
While statistics do show us that foreign-born entrepreneurs are more than twice as likely as native-born Americans to start a new business, some of these businesses are huge, like we mentioned earlier, Yahoo, eBay, PayPal, Google, so many more, Tesla. You know, we want to hear from the foreign-born entrepreneurs in our listening area. Why did you do it? What tricks did you figure out? And would you recommend it to others? Give us a call. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. But we're talking about the problems in the U.S. immigration system right now that's keeping these entrepreneur immigrants from coming to our shores and starting businesses. This is The Source on KSTX. We will be right back. Welcome back to The Source. I'm David Martin Davies. We're exploring the immigrant entrepreneurship and the economic impact of immigrants. Right now, we're going to listen to one story that came in from Mike Galarza, who wanted to start a company here in the U.S.
Hi, my name is Mike Galarza. I am the founder and CEO of Entrelis. Entrelis is a Silicon Valley startup that was founded with the idea to enable companies to never type a bill again and have an instant financial shot of their company. This is made thanks to the technology that we have developed. In the past, I encountered some visa issues because I'm originally from Mexico, so the company had to start out from Mexico to serve the US market. I was working originally as an employee on a big manufacturing company that was based out from San Carlos, California. And I was under a TN visa, which is an AFTA visa. So the problem that I encountered was that I couldn't not work full-time into the company that I was developing. So what I did instead was to first stay at that company working, and then I created a company in Mexico so I could go on and hire engineers over there and start developing the core IP of what we do now. And afterwards, it took me about a year so I could actually resign And in that year, we prepared the documents so we could present to the immigration service. And that's when I was able to make a change in the classification. But then it took another year for me to get the visa. And the visa was needed to be able to travel back and forth out of the U.S. and into Mexico or any other country. We did not have the certainty that I was going to be able to remain in the United States. So basically, I just decided to take the risk because I think that's one part of being an entrepreneur. It represented a lot of uncertainty. And also, I think the key part is that if we were willing to develop DC in the United States, it was not something that we could do because then from one night to the other, I could have been kicked out. The time is one of the constraints because once you file the documents for the classification change and also in Mexico at the embassy, that's a lot of time that you need to invest and spend. So I think that's the biggest issue. It's the time because probably a new startup that is developing something might not have a lot of time if it's 1 or 2 years. I think that's a big hurdle that you need to overcome. If I would be kicked out, it would be closed down the operations in the United States and I would be a Mexican company offering services to the United States, which it makes it harder to do partnerships. It's not the same to deal with a company that is outside the United States regulations and with one that is inside. I think there's a huge advantage for the United States company to do one relationships with and partnerships with other companies. And also be in the U.S. and all the laws that are available for them. And I'm not speaking about the tax laws, but I'm referring to the easiness of doing business. And it's harder to do business in Mexico, and also most importantly to find top talent. And that's why I think that there's a lot of ideas that are going around the world that need to be propelled by an ecosystem like Silicon Valley and obviously the United States. So when that happens, there's much more debate and much more debates. What generates it's obviously much more economic impact and better ideas. Right now, we are in the process of setting up our research and development in the United States and also marketing and business development positions. So that's a working process since I recently got the visa. So we are just getting started over there and developing those positions. We are estimating around 10 positions for the next 6 months.
And that is Mike Galarza. He is in Mexico City. He is the founder of and CEO of Entryless, a company that makes it possible for businesses to conduct all of their bill paying in real time without having to type a word. He is an example of an entrepreneur. He wants to be here in the United States. He's figuring out ways to get here, but it is a lot of red tape. Dane Stangler is, when you hear a story like that, and you authored the report, Give Me Your Entrepreneurs, Your Innovators, Estimating the Employment Impact of a Startup Visa. When you hear a story like Mike, and all he's got the capital to invest, he's got these ideas, he's got know-how, but it took him 2 years before he could even consider hiring a U.S. citizen. What's your reaction?
My reaction is that's unfortunate, and we're losing a lot of those kinds of stories, and we're losing not only the immediate impact in terms of job creation, which are the easiest to count, those are the most tangible, and that's what every policymaker wants to see, but we're also losing the innovation, the wealth that's going to be generated, whether that's wealth in terms of revenues and wages, or wealth created by in terms of impact on other parts of the economy. We're also losing that human capital, and I think with that story illustrates a lot of things. But one of the things that jumped out to me is this lesson that we hear over and over again, that we're not talking about individuals who, if they can't come to the U.S. or stay in the U.S. and start a company and hire Americans, they don't just go away. They are going to go start their company in another country. And that means we're not going to get the immediate economic benefits. It also means that company, to the extent that policymakers care, that company is going to compete with U.S. companies instead of being a U.S. company competing globally. And so, there's so many immediate things we can measure that we're losing, like jobs, but there's also those intangible down the road opportunity cost kinds of things that we may not be able to put a number on today, but that we're not going to get the benefit of.
So Dane, we've heard the success stories of Yahoo, eBay, PayPal, Google. Why were they able to do it and these other guys not? What's changed?
Sure, that's a good question. And I think, you know, part of it's a question of process. The companies you all just mentioned were in the 90s, and that was before a lot of tightening of immigration restrictions went into place after, you know, September 11th and after some of the other things, which were understandable restrictions and tightening, but they had a lot of unintended consequences. So that's one thing. And I think, two, you know, you're right, there are these successes that people focus on, but we also should remember that immigrants are not only more entrepreneurial in general than native-born Americans, but they start a lot of also non-tech companies that don't make the headlines. You know, there's things like restaurant and retail. There's food manufacturing companies, other types of manufacturing companies. There's engineering companies. There's all sorts of things. And so we're not only losing out on the tech companies, but there's whole swaths of the economy that are not benefiting from this either because of those restrictions. And also a lot of the process, the procedural part within the government, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence, at least, that small companies are treated the same as big companies in some of the visa approval processes, and so that really they don't have the resources to meet those demands that big companies have. And so there's almost an inborn bias in some of the procedures.
So Peter French, the founder of Free Flow Research here in San Antonio, you've seen firsthand how hard and how enthusiastic immigrant entrepreneurs want to come over here and create jobs and get started with their business ideas. Why? What is it about the United States that attracts these folks? Why do they want to come here to do it?
Well, the regulatory environment, I mean, the same one that is inadvertently stifling the innovation, is also the environment that is sort of a known entity. You know, our policies and procedures that regulate the other parts of our economy and of our banking are all very, very reliable. You know, you can go to a city you've never been before and presumably get the lay of the land and not have to worry about finding yourself needing to bribe the right official or be faced with some class-level hurdle that enables you to access the economy and the resources of a place. And so, you know, the U.S. is the gold standard in terms of where you would want to come and set up a business. And as I mentioned earlier, because we attract the best and the brightest at the university level, and because those people are here, we have this wonderful density of ideas and innovation. We just then have this disconnect. And so, you know, the fact that we are a place where people want to go, it depends on which blog you read, but not every entrepreneur really still agrees with that sentiment. But frankly, if you look at things like what Chile is doing, they've got a program called Startup Chile. They're now in the ninth cycle, and they invite teams of entrepreneurs to come down to Chile for a year. They give them $40,000 and a renewable visa, and they've attracted hundreds, literally, of startups, many that were in the United States, to come down to Chile to launch their company. And if you've got a multinational startup team and you just graduated from Stanford and you know you can't stay in California, you might think very seriously about going to Chile. Canada has just introduced a startup visa, and they are doing something very interesting. They are giving sort of the vetting process. They're turning it over to the tech accelerators. And so they're removing the you must create X number of jobs and you must have X dollar of investment. And they're saying to, you know, the people like Techstars in Canada, please suggest to us promising entrepreneurs who you think should stay here and we'll find a way to keep them. I think we need to look at policies that move more in that direction. And as far as we're concerned, at the free flow level, you know, we want to use the existing laws to structure research partnerships and to extend the pathway for international students so that they have more time to stay. And for the entrepreneurs, something else that we think makes a lot of sense is providing financial incentives, i.e. pay for the visa for folks who have a great idea but perhaps not the means to support their investment. Because right
now, that's what I was thinking, because, you know, the way the what I'm hearing about this startup visa, it does take money to get to that point where you can come in and get the startup visa. But if you're just a scrappy guy with a good idea and some know-how, that's still quite a hard thing to accomplish, Peter French.
That's exactly right. And I think that, let's say, for $5,000 or $7,000 invested in a young entrepreneur who's got an idea, if we can keep that idea here as opposed to having that student return to his country of origin and set up a competitive business and then attract his classmates, from the U.S. university where he attended back to his home country, that's a very small investment. You know, I read the other day Alamo Workforce and Alamo Colleges and Weatherford teamed up to do job training to help people get into the oil field business. And I think they were putting, $2,500 or so into each of these would-be oil field workers. You know, for twice that amount, we could
Right.
keep the next Google or Instagram right here in the U.S.
So let me ask you, Dane, really quickly, do you see movement in Washington, D.C.? Do the congressmen, do they get this? That doesn't sound very...
We don't see a lot of movement. I'm not sure how much hope there is for comprehensive immigration reform. What I hope happens is, in the event that Congress is unable to pass comprehensive reform, which I think is, everyone's talking more piecemeal now, I hope that some of the stuff that you and Peter have mentioned, things
okay.
like a startup visa, get part of an economic growth package rather than immigration.
All right, Dane, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us. And Peter French, founder of Free Flow Research, this is The Source on KSTX.